Accession number 27302, Real 2.
Mr. Dobbs, Real 2. We're talking about kit inspections made by the Sergeant Major, as you were saying. What happened if anyone had lost a piece of equipment or clothing?
Yeah, well, that was a problem, because we were told that if you lost any part of your equipment or your rifle, you would have to pay for that, and you would also have to pay for a replacement. And one chap said, no wonder a captain goes down with the ship. Yes, it would be expensive time if you lost anything.
Was there any stealing?
No, in our particular barrack room, they were very good. You could leave a few coppers on the bed and they would still be there when you came back. They were good mates.
How many people to the room?
Usually a platoon, roughly 40 men. Yes.
And was there any furniture in the room?
No, just the beds and a stove in the middle of the room.
You didn't have a table there?
No.
Now, how did you keep it clean?
Some places had tables. But I have been in barrack room where there was no tables.
Now, how did you keep it clean?
Oh, you had to keep the area around your own bed clean, but there was also a barrack room orderly. It was his job to make sure everything was spotless in the room. Like, he would do the cleaning out, the sweeping up and that sort of thing.
And was that one person?
They would change that person.
And it was a rotor?
Yes, with a rotor system.
And that was that the full day's job for that particular person, just keeping that
one
clean?
Yes, that's right.
Was there any NCOs in or near the room?
Well, there was usually an NCO in the room. A Lance Corporal and a Corporal.
Well, where did they sleep in relation to the rest of the men?
Well, sometimes, if they were fortunate, there would be a little cubbyhole in one end of the barrack room where that would be their quarters. But very often, they used to muck in with the rest of the lads.
Do you remember the name of the first two that you had?
No, I remember the name of the first sergeant we had, Sergeant Hall. A very clever athlete he was. Come in the barrack room and do hand flips and God knows what. But he was a peacetime soldier. He was a likeable chap.
They'd be very strict with you, presumably.
On parade, yes. Some of them were very relaxed off parade. They would have a chat to you and that. But you had other ones, which we used to call barrack room soldiers, which I think they would book you just for the sake of booking you, sort of thing.
Was there any bullying in the room? Was there any bullying going on from your own people?
No.
There was no one in the room?
No, there was none of that. No.
And were the drill people, were they all right? They weren't
drill
bullying?
Drill sergeants, yes.
There's no bullying again?
No. I mean, today's program you see on television, it's all rubbish compared to what we had.
No one throwing things through windows.
No, and there was no back chat to the officers and sergeants. There was none of that.
Where were the latrines?
Well, in the barracks they had proper latrines, proper toilets. But if you were in camp, you would have to dig slit trenches and that sort of thing for your latrines.
In the barrack room situation, as you say, where were the latrines in relation to the sleeping quarters?
Oh, they would be separate from the sleeping quarters. Yes, they would be away from the huts.
And did you have hot and cold water?
Yes, but that was the only time, mine, in barracks, when you were fortunate enough to have hot water.
The toilets themselves, where were they? Were they part of the latrine system or...?
No, they had flush toilets. Well, we were lucky, I suppose, but with being a barracks, it had been established for many years and they'd had all the modern facilities.
And these two would have to be kept clean?
Oh, immensely clean, yes. Spotlessly clean. As I say, there was an orderly looking after that. That was his job, the tin orderly. And they would be worked on a rotor system too.
What was the name, title of the unit you joined? I mean, and was the regiment was South Wales Borders, but what was your particular title for your room? You know, did you have a platoon number or a barrack room number? What?
Well, I was in number 8 platoon in those days. Each platoon had its own number, sort of thing, for the platoon to correspond.
Could you take me through a typical day of training in those very early days? What time would you get up, for example, in the morning? When was reveille?
Well, you had reveille about 6 o'clock. And then there'd be a stampede to the ablutions to get washed and sheared. Get back and tidy up your bed and your area. And then you'd go along for your breakfast. I think it was about between 7 and 8 breakfast. Then you'd rush back then and get prepared for your first parade.
What did you get for breakfast?
You had pretty good food. You had your porridge, and bacon and egg, that sort of thing.
Was it a cafeteria system? You'd have to line up?
Yes. Well, you had to, that's right, you were lined up and you walked past the tables where the cooks had held your plate out and they would dollop out a ladle full of different vegetables and that, and go along to the end and get your meat.
And this is breakfast we're thinking of at the moment.
Oh, breakfast, yes. It'd be on the same basis. You'd have your breakfast, your bacon and one egg. Sometimes that would be burnt black.
I was going to ask you, was it well cooked? And then you would obviously sit at a table.
Yes, there were a proper dining hall, yes.
When the meal was over, what system had you for washing your utensils?
Well, you had you usually go into the ablutions and use the sinks in there.
You didn't have one of these big containers of hot water that outside the building that you could wash your material, you wash your utensils in?
If you were on in a camp sort of thing, away from the barracks, you would have that type of thing.
But these you went to, as you say, you went to the ablutions.
Yes.
So then you, as you say, you went back and you were to prepare for your first parade of the morning.
Yes.
What might that be?
There will be roll call and you may get a lecture or you may be on barrack room parades, doing out a march and salute and that sort of thing, you know.
Yes, we're coming to the drills.
Yes.
So one of those original, we're again in the very early days, your early parade on the morning would probably be a drill parade.
Yes, really. Yes.
How did they teach you to drill?
That's a difficult question to ask. I mean, they would give a demonstration and then you had to follow.
So they demonstrated to you
what they wanted, what they expected,
and the orders that went with it. And of course, you're all civilians at this point in time.
You've got no
idea whatsoever. Did you have the situation of people not knowing their left from their right?
Oh, yes, yes. I remember we had one fella, he came off a farm and he used to walk like a farmer, hell of a long stride, and he couldn't march, not for the life of him. In the end, they tied his leg to one of the other soldiers so that they would restrict his... It's pace, sort of thing. It was very funny. It took him a long time before he could actually march properly.
Who were drilling you?
Usually a sergeant. And then you'd have a sergeant major's parade at the weekends on a Saturday morning or something.
Did you pick it up quickly?
I did, yes. Because one of my brothers was in the army and he used to teach me a little thing or two now and again.
Now, other than marching drill and left and right turns, were there any other drills that you were given early in your career?
I think we covered nearly everything in those days. Gradually worked up, you know.
Now, the South Wales Borderers would they be called a heavy infantry regiment? They didn't have...
Yeah,
they weren't light infantry.
They were the infantry, yes. Whereas, like the DLI, they were the light infantry.
What was the pace per minute of the Borderers?
The Borderers were 120 paces per minute. I think the DLIs were about 140.
And you say you gradually built up.
Oh yes, yes.
As you went on.
Yes. But you had your 10 weeks square bashing that they called, where they were teaching you how to the basics then of the drills and that.
How did you take to the language of the army?
Oh, I wasn't so bad really. I more or less expected what I received.
Did you have anyone who objected to it?
There was a time at the end of the army when there was a fellow who objected. We were on parade one day. By this time I was a sergeant. That was towards the end of the war. We were in Germany. And it was Sergeant Major's inspection. So I drew my platoon out on parade 10 minutes before time to examine them and see if they were all properly dressed. And I go through the ranks and I saw one fella didn't have his rifle. I said, "Forrester, where's your rifle?" He said, "The war is over and I'm finished soldiering." So I said, "But you're still in the army." And he said, "I'm not going to fetch my rifle." So by that time, Sergeant Major was standing beside me, ready to take over. So I repeated the order. I said, "Go back to your barrack room and get your rifle at the double and get back on parade." He said, "I've finished soldiering." So I said, "Well, I have no alternative but to place you under arrest." So I detailed a corporal and two private soldiers to march him away to the guard room. And then I handed the platoon over to the Sergeant Major for his drill parade.
But presumably they were very rare.
Oh, that was the only time when a fellow was stubborn like that.
Route marches, how did they prepare you for route marches? Was it a gradual extension of your marches, or
yes,
did you just go off on it?
Yes, gradually extended. But usually they ended up with about 10 or 12 miles of a march. As a matter of fact, we had a forced march from Alnwick to Morpeth, 19 miles, when we were stationed in Alnwick, with all your kit on your foot.
What did you carry on a route march as a rule?
Well, you had all your equipment. Had pouches, with ammunition pouches. Then you had your side, your water bottle, your bayonets. You had your little haversack on the other side. A big pack on the back. With all your, with your great coat in and blankets, all your kit. It must weigh about 35 pounds altogether, I would think. And of course, on a forced march, you had it was pretty heavy, and we weren't used to it in those days.
Was there a rest period?
Yes, every 60 minutes, they had a 10-minute break. And we were always advised to lay on our back with the feet up against something, a hedge or a post or something, to let the circulation flow back down your legs. And it's relieved the pain a good bit. Yes. And that halt every 60 minutes, a 10-minute break every 60 minutes.
What happened to those whose feet were giving them trouble? I was thinking, particularly in the early days, with the feet getting used to
them. Yes, well, when you got back off a route march, the first thing you did was to wash your feet, sit on your bed until the MO came to examine your feet.
And that was after every route march?
Yes, yes.
Did anyone collapse on a route march, not able to carry it through?
Not that I'm aware of, not in my lot anyway.
So they stuck it irrespective of what the feet were
doing?
Yes,
that's true. They suffered, but they managed to survive.
Did you, obviously, these route marches, as you say, 10, 11 miles would be quite long. Did you carry food with you?
Well, we used to carry hardtack, biscuits. I don't know if you've seen them, but they were hard as hell to bite.
And your water bottle?
And your water bottle, yes, that was your liquid, yes.
Who would accompany you? Was an officer?
There was usually an officer, well, the company commander, and then each platoon had a lieutenant. But in action, you wouldn't see many officers because they were nearly all killed off. I think they would only average about 3 weeks for a frontline officer in action.
Well, we've talked about your drill and your route matches. Did you have PT?
Oh, yes.
Was that an every morning situation?
I wouldn't say it was every morning, but we had special PT parades, you know, and sport as well.
Was there a break in the middle of the morning? Did you get the positive?
You got about a 10-minute break around about 11 o'clock.
And were you able to get a drink or anything to eat?
Oh, yes. Well, if you're anywhere near a coffee or anything, you can nip in and get a drink. You know, just depends where you were stationed, so I think.
Was there a naffy on your first camp?
In the barracks, yes.
And you didn't get time to go along and get a drink there before you were back on your actions again?
Yes, you could, if you rushed and avoided the crowd, you could get a quick drink and get back on parade, sort of thing.
So the second part of the morning, what might happen for that? If you were drilling in the first half, what happened in the second half?
You'd probably have lectures. And then it'd be the same thing again after dinner. You'd be on parade again for different things.
What lectures were they giving you?
Medical lectures, you know, to avoid VDs and all this sort of thing, and the usual thing. And you had the current affairs, the local news and that sort of thing, what was happening, how the war was progressing. You'd get informed of all this sort of thing, you know.
And that would take you up to dinner time, in effect. What would be that? Would be a main meal of the day.
At dinner time, yes.
Whatever
yes.
time was, 12 yeah. or whatever it yeah. was. Yeah. What kind of food might you get then?
You'd get a cooked meal. Yes, you'd get a good cooked meal. Well, some people say it wasn't good, but I found the army food pretty good. It was very sustaining. It wasn't posh, you might say, but it was. Served the purpose. I did no harm by it.
What might you get?
You had your spuds and carrots and peas and that sort of thing and meat. And then you would have rice for your afters.
And then when that was over, it was back to the afternoon?
Oh, yes, back on parades, that sort of thing.
And did they follow the same pattern as the morning?
Much the same, yes, yes.
Did you have anti-gas training?
Yes, yes we did. We were issued with gas capes, which in the event of a gas attack, you put these capes on, which covered the whole lot, all your equipment, everything that you were wearing. And you had your respirator, of course, to put on.
Did they put you through the gas hut?
Yes, went through gas chambers. Yes.
How was that done?
It was in a room, which... they let off these, I forget the name of the, Fosgene gas, I think it was called. Where you went in and you had to sniff this and you were glad to give back out because your eyes was watering and everything.
You had to take your mask off and...
Yes, for a few seconds, yes.
And presumably that was to make you be aware just
to be aware of it.
How important your mask was.
That's right. Yes.
What were they like to wear? Could you see through them?
The gas mask. Well, the trouble was, they'd get so much condensation that you couldn't see through them. No. You had to pull the side of the mask away from your face to let some fresh air in. Now and again, which was against the rules, but it was a bit stuffy otherwise.
When were you introduced to weapon training?
Oh, that came within about the first few weeks, yes.
What form did that take?
All part of your square bashing sort of thing, you know. But you never finished right throughout your career. You were still doing training.
What form did weapon training take?
Well, you would go up onto the range and usually fire your rifles, and progress to machine guns, pistols, that sort of thing.
At what ranges were you firing? What distances?
It could be anything from 300 yards to 1,000 yards.
And presumably from those, you got your marksmen, the ones that were particularly good with the rifle.
Oh, yes, yes. They had little competition sort of thing.
Was it dangerous? Were there any accidents?
Well, there was one sergeant demonstrating how to throw a Mills bomb. I don't know if you've seen them. It's like a miniature rugby ball sort of thing, same shape, with a lever down to one side and held in with a pin. You pull the safety pin out, still holding the lever in position, and as soon as you threw it overarm towards your enemy, you had 4 seconds before the explosion took place. Well, on this particular day, we were on a beach, and the sergeant was giving a demonstration, but he didn't duck quick enough, and he was killed by his own grenade.
That must have been a horrible experience.
Oh, yes, yes.
So you did hand grenade training, rifle training, machine guns you mentioned.
Yes, yes.
What other weapon did you have? Do you have the Bren gun?
Yes, yes, oh yes.
What was it like as a weapon?
Very good gun, yes. Of course it didn't fire as rapid as some of the later guns, but very effective weapon. But heavy to carry about, like.
And did you have to learn to dismantle them and put them together again?
You had to learn to dismantle them, even in the dark. Or you'd be blindfolded if you were having this practice during daylight. And you had to fumble around until you knew exactly which part was where it had to go, sort of thing. You stripped the machine gun down and reassembled it blindfolded.
Did you have any anti-tank weapon?
We had an anti-tank gun, yes. It was a light weapon which could be carried about and fired from the shoulder. And it fired a bullet about the same size as a cigar. That was another very cumbersome thing to carry about.
Was it the boys' anti-tank rifle?
That's it, yes. I just couldn't think of anything.
I understand it was a fearful thing to fire.
It had a nasty recoil, yes.
What about mortars?
Mortars, 2-inch mortars, 3-inch mortars, yes.
And again, did you all receive training in those?
Oh, yes, ever? Yes. Yes, they were carried about. They were stripped and carried about. Usually a couple of men would carry a mortar, the base section, away from the barrel sort of thing.
Were they an effective weapon?
I would imagine so. I would like to be on the receiving end.
Bayonet practice, did you do
Yes,
that?
We had that too, bayonet practice. First of all, it started off with sacks of hay dangling from a wooden post or something like that. The trouble was, you had to go over an assault course, and you were about buggered by the time you came around to do your bayonet practicing. It was, I suppose, look upon it now, it was fun, but it was hard work in those days.
And that was charging these
You struck your bayonet into these sacks, And then he would have to lay down and fire five rounds on a target. And everything was all steamed up with your gas mask on. You had to do training with the gas mask on. It was a rough time at times.
And were you encouraged to yell when you went forward?
Oh, yes, yes. If you're doing an assault, you'd be encouraged to yell. Although we didn't do that in actual fighting. That was different altogether.
What time, again in these early days, what time would your training day end and you would have time after that to yourselves?
Well, usually after 4 or 5 o'clock, then you would knock off for your tea, unless you were picked for fatigues or guard duties, fire drills, fire duty, plane spotting. They'd have these different jobs to do. If you were lucky, you were free for the night.
What would you get for tea?
Usually a piece of cake or jam and bread, that sort of thing, you know, and tea. And there was no supper, not unless you were on guard duty.
It wasn't a big meal at all?
No.
Just a snack?
That's right, yeah.
And then you would obviously be in your barrack rooms?
Yes, or if you wanted to... If you were anywhere near a town or a village, you could go out at night time. If you had the money, you could go into a pub for a pint or a game of darts or into the Naffy or the Guildhall. Some towns had turned their Guildhalls into a Naffy for the troops. Go in and get a cup of tea and a cake or something like that, you know.
And the local people, how did they receive you?
Oh, very good. Normally very good, yes.
Back in your barracks, did you have jobs to do? I'm thinking now, of course, of cleaning equipment for the next day. Did you have to go through that?
Well, they had a notice board and they would more or less tell you what was the time and what the nature of the parades were going to be the following day. And... you could very well polish up on what you expect them to do, sort of thing. I mean, they would have such a thing as scabbard inspection. Your being a scabbard, that'd be highly polished. Well, you'd spend hours the night before with the old boot polish and spit on a rag, and there you are, polishing up.
Blancoing did.
Blancoing, yes.
And that would be all of your equipment?
All the weapon equipment had to be blancoed, yes.
So even your leisure time, you were pretty busy one way or another.
You were, more or less. Well, they almost warned you that you're a soldier 24 hours a day. And even off duty, you had to carry a gas mask with you and your tin hat. To be found without one was a... You were put on a charge.
How long had you to serve from the very beginning before you were allowed out?
Oh, we were allowed out more or less immediately.
Straight away?
If you were not picked for guard duty or anything.
And to get out, you'd have to go past the guard room?
Oh, yes. And at one place we were at, there was a huge mirror. And you had to stand in front of this mirror to make sure that you were dressed properly. If you wasn't, the guard commander would yell at you, get back to your barracks room and get yourself properly dressed before you come back.
And they didn't try that on it, Casey. No matter how well you dressed, they made you go back.
Oh, well, on parade sometimes. I remember one particular time where we were on parade and the officer came around. He was just a young officer at that. Making himself important, and he couldn't find any fault with my uniform or the way I was dressed, but he checked me for dirty fingernails. He had to find a fault somewhere, you see.
You'd have to be particularly clean and smart for guards.
Oh yes, my word, aye, spotlessly clean.
And was there some competition between the rooms or the platoons for turnout of the best guards?
Well, I wouldn't say the competition between the barracks rooms, but before you went on guard duty, you were inspected by your sergeant or whoever was the guard commander, and you ought to be spotless. Yes.
That include the soles of your boots? Did they have to be?
Oh, yeah.
Did they make you lift your boots up to have
a look at them? Well, they were getting a bit extreme in those. Yeah. Well, on parade, like. But your toe caps and the heels had to be highly polished.
This was spit and polish, was it?
Spit and polish, yes.
Did you have such things as a stick man, as being the smartest man on parade, who didn't? On guard duty, sorry, who didn't do the actual duty itself. Did you have a stick man?
No.
No,
we didn't anyway.
Some regiments did have what they called stick men.
Probably guards or something like that, guard regiment.
And where would your guard be done?
Pardon?
Whereabouts would your guard be done? What were you guarding in effect? Where were you?
Well, you could be guarding a VIP, for example. When we were in Berlin, I did a guard duty for Sir William Strang. He was political advisor, I think, to the...
And in the early days in the army,